Attention Austin guitar players and bass players. Are you in need of setup or repair on your axe? Well, I have the guy for you, gang. That's Jason Swedberg over at J. Scott Luthery, and you can find him at J. Scott Luthery on Instagram. Now, if you listen to the show, you know I've been talking about Jason for years. Why is that? Because I've been taking my guitars to Jason for over 20 years. Not only does he do the best job, but he has the best prices and the fastest service in town. Again, find him at J. Scott Luthery on Instagram. Not only is he doing an amazing job repairing and setting up guitars, he is now building guitars. That's right. He built me an SG Junior, which I have, and it sounds amazing. It feels great. It's the very first SG Junior he ever built. I've got a J. Scott Luthery SG Junior. You can go see him at J. Scott Luthery on Instagram. Get a guitar built. Get your guitars fixed. Get them set up. It's time, man. They've been hanging on the wall all through COVID. Now it's time to get them out, get them fixed, and get out there and play. J. Scott Luthery on Instagram. Let's get down. Folks, are you tired of people telling you your band is too darn loud when you're just trying to practice in your house or garage? Well, if you live in Austin, I have the solution for you. That's Space Rehearsal and Recording. Space is a state-of-the-art affordable venue for rehearsal and recording located just a few miles south of downtown Austin. They have 31 spacious rooms, great PAs, fantastic courteous staff. They have everything you need to get your artistic business together at Space. Find them at 512-448-9518 or go to spaceatx.com and start playing as loud as you want in Space Rehearsal and Recording. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host, Johnny Howdy.
All right, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys have all had a good week, whatever it is you did this week. Maybe you had yesterday off for Veterans Day. It's pretty interesting that that was on a Thursday. Aren't those normally on Mondays? That's what I normally thought it was. So hopefully you had maybe a short week, maybe a little four-day work week. Maybe you're listening to this when you're out on the trail. Look out. Be careful. Look for dog poop. I had this thing the other night. Oh, my God. So I have this dog, Rosie, right? She's a puppy. And the other night, I was about to head out to this rehearsal with this artist named Quentin Arispe that we're working with the Awesome Music Foundation. So I'm about to head out to this thing, and I take my dog out, and it's dark. And I come back inside my house and let her off the leash and do some stuff that I need to do before I head out. And all of a sudden, I'm like, God, it smells like poop in here. I'm like, is there poop on my shoe? And I look, and there is. But then I look on the floor. My entire apartment had poop steps everywhere. So I had to quickly get into a whole thing where I mopped the whole thing. Rosie was going crazy. There was just poop, literally poop just all over the place. Everyone, if you have a dog and you walk that dog, please take bags and pick up the poop. Stepping in that poop, it sucked, man. I had somewhere to go. My house was cut. I couldn't just leave poop here, walk into a poop house again, you know? Had to clean it up before I left. Anyway, it's actually kind of been one of those weeks. It really has. I feel like over the last few weeks I've had these mental health stumbles, you know, where issues that I've worked on for a lot of years have reared their ugly heads. Insecurities based in trauma, fear, that stuff, letting it get to me and getting to a point where I feel like, man, I've got to reach out and talk to somebody about this. And so I reached out to my therapist. I'm back in it. Back in it regularly. Yeah, I'm actually thinking of upping my thing for a couple of weeks just because it's been a tough time. And you know, I'm pretty sure everyone listening to this has been going through times like that, you know? And even when you think you're doing okay, then all of a sudden these things happen and they're like slaps in the face where you're like, man, I thought I was doing great. I thought I was doing okay. But I'm not. I'm stuffing the shit down. I'm not saying anything about how I feel, and I'm trying to go through my life with like just a smile on my face and like everything's okay. Everything's okay. It's not all okay all the time, you know? And that's okay for it not to be. Because that's the way life is. And there's nothing you can really do about it. You can't control that shit. You know? But those things do affect the way that we relate to others, our personal relationships with others, the way we view the world, the way we walk through the world. And I want to walk through it with calm and confidence and not insecurities and not fear. Like real, like, you know, we all teeter on that. We all have our days, so to speak. But sometimes when it goes on for more than a day, goes on for more than a week, those feelings, you got to do something about it. So anyway, so I'm back in the thing, talking to the lady, the rapist. Anyway, she's great. I've been seeing her for quite a few years. Hopefully you have someone that you trust. If not, you know, it's real easy now. It's almost all on Zoom. I'm still Zooming with the lady. It's like, hey, you want to Zoom it out? Yeah, I'm cool. We can Zoom. I don't have to go anywhere. Anyway, here's to, like, you know, a better end of the year. One thing that's kept me sane is getting back to work with Skyrocket, like getting back to work last weekend after, you know, we had a month off. And in these times, you know, that kind of shit starts messing with you. But hey, you know, quickly, anyway, it's good to be back at work. But real quickly, I do want to let you know that if you're listening to this show the day that it comes out, Friday, November 12th, 2021, and you live in Houston, Skyrocket is playing tonight at Last Concert Cafe there in Houston. Yeah, it's going to be great. We go on about 9. I think you find it at lastconcertcafe.com or just look up skyrockettheband.com. You can get tickets through there. Come on out. See the show. It's a really good time. I love playing out there. Last time we played there was New Year's Eve 2019 to 2020. That was the last time we played out there. So hopefully we can go there and maybe we should sage the stage before we go on. It's nice that it's outside. It's not another crazy indoor show. You know, we played indoors last time. I can't remember. Oh, Rockefellers. It was a little weird. And I actually was starting to get COVID at that show. Crazy. Anyway, I'm glad it's outside. It's tonight, Friday, November 12th. Come out for a good time. If you are already a fan and you didn't know we were coming, we are coming. It's going to be great. It's going to be a really good time. I'm actually playing Friday and Saturday there in Houston. We're doing a private thing on Saturday, but I'm taking Rosie with me and we're heading out Friday morning early. We're going to go to my grandma's house. We're going to stay there. That way she can stay with them while I go play my gigs, stay with my grandma, my aunt, and all the dogs there and have a good time. So Rosie's doing her first rock and roll road trip this weekend. So I'll let you know how it goes. Actually, you can follow me on Instagram at howdidigethere_official or just Johnny Gowdy. Hey gang, I want to remind you to subscribe to this podcast, wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher. Also, if you find the Podbean app, you'll be able to access all 1,110 shows of How Did I Get Here. God, there's that many shows out there. But if you get the Podbean app, you can also get all the regular shows you listen to, WTF, if you listen to Fresh Air with Terry Gross, which I do, or Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. All that stuff is on there. It just depends on what app you listen to. But we put out new shows every Tuesday and every Friday. Sometimes it's 3 days a week. Every once in a while, it can be 5 days a week. 2020 had a lot of 5 days a week. I didn't know what to do, so I was just interviewing everyone I possibly could. But great conversations with great artists all the time. And today, gang, is no different. I have a great conversation with singer-songwriter Jenny Pirrott, whose second album, her second solo album, drops today. It's called The Fire I Saw. Absolutely fantastic record. It's gorgeous. She was going to do this record normally in a studio with like a regular producer guy and do all that stuff. But when COVID hit, she got a little freaked out. So she stayed indoors. She taught herself how to use Logic on her computer to record. It's a recording system if you don't know what I'm talking about. Found a Juno keyboard. I can't remember what the Juno was, a Juno 50 or something like that, like some mid-90s or 2000s keyboard. And really went to town. And let me tell you something, this record's great. Not only are the songs phenomenal, but the sort of like minimalist, insane production vibe of it is jarring. It's gorgeous. Gorgeous. This record drops today, The Fire I Saw. Get out there and find her at jennyparrott.com. There's a link to that in the text of this podcast. Great conversation with Jenny Pirrott. You know, I was reading on her website. She's getting out and starting to play shows with bands, and she's playing tonight a very special rock and roll release show, Friday, November 12th, 6 p.m. at the Hole in the Wall here in Austin, Texas. Then she's hitting the road. She's going to be going through the Southeast and stuff. You can find her at jennyparrott.com. Find out if she's coming to a town near you. Her first record, which came out in 2017, When I Come Down was chosen as Austin Chronicles top 10 of 2017. So you know she's a really great songwriter. This record is no different. It kicked my ass listening to it. I love it. I love it. She's a tremendous artist. And we had a really good time talking. Once again, man, it's great to be talking to people in person. It's great to be sitting down face to face and chatting it up with people face to face. God, it feels so good. It was great talking to Jenny Parrott. Enjoy our conversation. Let's get down. Man, fucking great record.
Thank you.
And so, like, real quick.
Are we already, like, rolling?
Man, it is going. I mean, I hope so. Yeah. Where do I start with this? Oh, Daniel Jones. I saw him in your Instagram when I was creeping through.
Yes.
There he was, my old friend.
Okay, yeah.
We played together for years.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of project?
It was my band.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. It's Johnny Gowdy.
He can do anything. I've seen him play like in a metal band. The name escapes me, but it's on my guitar case. Like, totally awesome metal. He can play like Western swing and country, and then he can do whatever I'm asking him to do, which is I'm not sure what, but he's awesome.
So
it was his birthday this week.
Oh, it was?
Yesterday.
Happy birthday,
Daniel Jones, DJ.
Dude.
Happy birthday, babe.
What a great dude.
He's wonderful.
Yeah. I wonder if he listens to the show.
We'll find out. We'll just put it out.
Once you played with me back in those days, probably can't stand the sound of my fucking voice at this point.
Okay. Now I want to interview you and be like, so tell me about the time you played with Daniel.
I can tell you the origin story of me and Daniel's relationship, and then we can get into you.
Okay.
I was in this band Endosheen in the early 2000s. And there was this guy I was talking to. He was wearing a U-Haul shirt backstage at Antone's. And we're just talking, going on and on. So we start walking out to the stage because it's time to play. And this guy with the U-Haul shirt's coming on stage. I'm like, hey, buddy. So the band is playing. He's like, I'm playing drums with the band tonight. No one had told me. So that's how I met Daniel. He had come straight from work just to the gig. He's like, sorry, man. Sorry, I'm dressed like this.
Aww.
Yeah. I can't remember why he was playing with us.
Because anyway, he's a drummer.
No. I can't remember what happened to their regular drummer. The Fire I Saw. This is going to be dropping on the 12th, the day that the album comes out.
Yes.
So this conversation. So two treats in
this.
One.
Yeah. Okay.
So like, you're listening to it and you haven't, if you're listening to this show and you haven't listened to the record yet, maybe go listen to the record, come back or go afterwards.
Happy November 12th, everyone listening from the past.
From the past.
From the past.
Things were different back then.
Things were different 7 days ago. So, inflation was different.
Yeah. So so this record started out as you were going to do it with your band. Is that what you were going to do? What happened? Tell me.
So the process was not, you know, perfectly planned and organized. So I got Daniel and Gary Newcomb and myself over to Z Sounds Recording in Dripping Springs before the plague. And we recorded bass, drums, keys, rhythm guitar, and vocals on like 17 songs. And then the pandemic hit. And what I would normally do would be like, oh, cool, I made the basic tracks. Now let's like get our friends to play solos and riffs and this and that, but then you know, the whole freaking corona, and so I just was sitting at home and I was like, well, I mean, I might as well just make up all the parts, I guess, because I want people over, but I don't really want people over right now.
Yeah.
So I just played, experimented with my Roland Juno G. Do you know that keyboard?
Synth? Yeah.
It makes so many cool noises.
Yeah.
So, and I filled in what was missing best I could myself and, you know, farmed out some of the parts, of course. But Yeah, so I just...
Is that you playing electric guitar, though, on there? Like some of the fucking no. violent guitar? Is that Gary?
Gary is playing some
that's
electric...
That's Gary Newcomb?
That's my husband, yeah.
That's your husband?
That's my husband.
Hold on a second.
Everyone, wait a minute.
Everyone, wait a minute.
Everyone, stop.
I totally know Gary.
Like, I do, Gary too.
I hope so.
Biblically.
For those of you at home.
Yeah, so he's playing some guitar on there. I'm playing... Not electric, I'm playing acoustic, and then my friend Monk Orgel Turbold is playing, and he lives in Mongolia, and I met him in the States when he was playing for Lauryn Hill.
Oh.
So sometimes he's just one of those people you can send him a track and be like, can you rip a solo that sounds like Angelo Badalamenti, but more feminine and grunge? And he's like, yeah, man, here it is. Thanks. And you're like, what? No,
yeah,
thank you, dude.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So back to Sweet Gary. Okay, so I guess Gary is a guy I kind of saw during the pandemic.
Really?
Uh-huh. He's one of the only guys. I work with the Austin Music Foundation. Stone Wheels was in our artist development program.
Oh, okay,
so
yeah,
so at the
yeah.
Bubble last year, I remember he did come a little bit.
Yeah, that's where this was mixed. Okay. Or parts of it okay. was mixed at the Bubble, yeah.
Did Frenchie mix it?
Yes.
Great. He's my guy.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, so we know
we're not like you and Gary, but our worlds, yeah, intertwine.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I've known Gary for a long time. He's a really amazing, amazing, amazing musician.
He's the bomb at like everything.
Yeah,
he's a wonderful husband and partner. And dude, he didn't know how to cook when we met, and now he's cooking all the time. Yes.
Whoa. Damn.
You should come over for some Gary food sometime.
Yeah, invite me over.
I just did.
Oh, yeah, good. No, what I mean, like an actual, like, hey, Tuesday or whatever.
Oh,
but
okay.
Not right now.
Oh,
we'll have to
okay.
look at our calendars.
I'll
this
have,
is a podcast.
Okay. Can the dog come?
Yeah.
Yes!
That's supposed to be me that just says
that. Rosie, what do you like? Do you have any dietary restrictions, babe?
So far, we don't know. There's a lot of stuff you don't know when you get just some dog somebody found on the streets of Fort Worth, you know, running the streets.
It's a Disney movie over here, everyone.
Jenny, this record's great. People can get it. It's 8 songs. You're an amazing songwriter. Is that you who you play piano?
Mm-hmm.
And that's your piano at your house?
Some of it is our little upright,
yeah,
and some of it is the Juno.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's like a mix.
I guess I can tell the ones that are the upright.
Yeah.
You can.
A little jingly, out of tune.
Yeah, kinda. Yeah. A little more piano-y.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some Juno, there's some pads in there for sure.
Yeah,
that are
yeah.
like super Juno-y.
And all the synth parts are from the Juno.
Yeah. The Juno, basically, for those of you listening that are like, why do they keep on saying Juno? It's a keyboard by Roland. There's a Juno, Juno 106 was, I think, the most popular one. Juno.
I don't know. The whatever. Most popular one for me is the one I have.
Yeah. But yours isn't from the turn of the decade of late 70s and their 80s or something.
I think mine's from the 90s.
Right. So this thing's like Duran Duran Rio. That's pretty much almost all Juno.
Also, for fans of Elon Musk's ex-partner, Grimes plays a Juno G.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Juno G.
Juno OG.
Yeah, the June OG.
Yeah.
So, let me tell you this, a couple of songs I thought were fantastic.
Uh-oh, okay.
Hallelujah.
Yes.
Pretty amazing. Really amazing song. And also, July, I thought, was a gorgeous song.
Mom's
also,
in the kitchen.
The first single, that's a good choice. Perfect.
That I
just,
thought.
Just like, yeah. As like the record guy in me, like the A&R guy in me is like, that's right. That's the one I would have, that's the choice.
That's cool.
That's the one that says hi. And then the Georgica is a fucking amazing song. It's just all,
thank
you're great.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I love writing songs so much. Like, I get really despairy and depression-y, but then I like sometimes write a song and I'm like, everything's a little better now.
Where are you from?
I was born in the live music capital of Southern Connecticut, New Haven.
Oh, New Haven. I played there.
Yeah, Cafe yeah. 9.
Yeah. What's that?
Cafe 9.
No, I played somewhere else. I can't remember the name of it. So you were born there. What? what was the situation? Your parents were...
My parents are extremely divorced. And sort of an interesting town to grow up into. It's like sort of a post-industrial city, but it has Yale there, the university. So there's a lot of segregation, like class segregation and race segregation. There's a lot of interesting culture. There's beautiful nature, woods, beautiful sea and meadows and stuff. But it's not the place for me. But it was a neat place to grow up, I guess.
Was it? And then, like, at some point, you found out you were different, and then you were like, I gotta get the hell out of New Haven?
A little bit, yeah. Like, I lived for a while in Poughkeepsie, New York, on the Hudson area, you know, that part of New York. And then I lived in Nebraska for a while, and it seemed like people who wanted to make music could go to, like, New York or Austin or L.A., and Austin sounded like the least frightening of those choices financially.
And
And so I came here, and I found it was, like, easy to be somebody who was, like, queer and dressed weird and wanted to be an artist. Like, back home, people are like, oh, my God, what are you doing?
Playing
music on the street? Oh, God. But here they're like, good luck. Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
Just a different.
So that's what you were busking. So wait. Let's go. When did music speak to you in a way where you connected, where you were like, I want to be a part of this? You know what I mean?
Okay.
There's that moment we all have that.
I think I was like 4 or 5, and I went, I think my dad took me to see a high school musical in a town near New Haven, literally, like high school kids, and one of the young girls sang her ass off so hard that I remember sitting in the little seats and getting goosebumps up and down my arms, and I went, okay, I want to do that. And then I just kind of started singing nonstop.
Right.
Since the age of like 4 or 5. And yeah, I remember getting like shushed at the dinner table and shushed in math class. And I just sang on the bus all the way to school.
What were you singing? Like what were you into at the time?
On the bus on the way to school, there was a kid who went to church at a gospel place. So he would like teach me his church songs and we would be really loud and annoying. And then at home, I would sing, like, whatever was on the modern rock alternative Connecticut radio station.
Right,
then,
which was what?
Oh, dang. Alanis Morissette, Garbage.
Yeah.
Everclear. It's the mid-90s. Yeah, I was born in 84.
Yeah,
so.
When it was like pop,
Wait,
pop.
What are you doing?
Is she bothering you?
No, I just wasn't sure she was eating. Shout out to the dog, everyone, bringing the vibes.
Shout out to Rosie, just being nuts.
Good dog. Aw. And then, you know, I had cassette tapes. I had Sheryl Crow. That was one of my first cassettes. Janet Jackson, Mariah Carey. Like, little girl. Like, I think I was 8 when I had those cassettes.
Okay.
Yeah.
You just rocked it out.
And then so I would funny. Just sing at the bus stop just by myself waiting.
Hey, get your head out of her purse. She's taking stuff out of your purse.
Yeah, she's like, I don't think your vaccine card is legit. I'm going to get you.
Okay, so Alanis Morissette, Garbage, Everclear.
I mean, I hope no one just is tuning in right now and going, these are her favorites.
They don't tune in the middle of a podcast.
Okay. Language, please. I mean, yeah, but that was like...
For those of you just tuning in, I'm sitting here with Jenny Ferret, songwriter. Award or top 10. You know, your first record was top 10 in the. I was like, how do I not? Like, I know your name. And then I was like, well, how do I not know this person's music? It's exactly what the kind of music that I gravitate towards anyway. And she's really good at it. And then I was like, probably because I saw her name in the top 10. I'm like, who's this person? And she's brand new. Fuck her.
But
she just came from. You know what I mean? You don't have that yet.
Have what yet?
But surely you open the paper at some point and see someone's name and you're like,
pause. What do you mean yet? How long do you think I've been making music?
No. I'm saying I just mean like in life.
Buddy.
There's a point where other people's successes seem like
your failures.
Attacks on you and your own
Could
career.
You guys succeed a little less? You're hurting my fucking feelings. Thank you.
I'm getting over that, but it still happens from time to time. Rosie, if you do not leave her alone, we're going to stop this podcast.
Rosie thought she was interviewing me via my crotch and purse.
That's how they communicate.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's cool that you were annoyed by my
I don't know if I was. I'm just assuming that that's what happened. But that's a great thing. So, okay, let's go back to the singing on the buses. So at what point did you ask for an instrument or to learn an instrument or anything? Or
I asked, I think, when I was like an adolescent, asked for guitar, and I was told no, that I had to learn piano first. And I was like, I have no idea how to even begin to play piano. So that's a cool obstacle.
Yeah.
So I just kept singing, and when I graduated high school and moved away, a friend gave me a broken Ovation guitar. Yeah, so that's how I started, with a 5-string Ovation, like the slippery backed kind.
Yeah.
And I wore a lot of polyester at the time, so that shit just like would slide off my pants. So it was really slow going, me becoming a musician. But here I am.
When did you start playing out, and like when did you start writing songs and stuff like that? Like when you got the Ovation?
Immediately.
Okay.
Not the playing out, but the
writing.
Yeah. Because I didn't even know what being a songwriter was. Like, I didn't really grow up in an artsy community. Like, I didn't know musicians, didn't know artists. Right. And all I knew when I got a guitar was, I want to invent what I want to sing. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
And then later I was like, hey, dum-dum, that means you're a songwriter.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But I was like, I just want to go la 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 la. And yeah, but
With the stuff that you were saying, like when you were writing these songs at first, what were they like? Were they?
You mean back in the day or for this?
When you first started writing songs.
Shit, they were.
Bad Alanis Morissette songs?
I wish. They were like about dreams I had and about like birds that I thought were hawks that later turned out to be turkey vultures, you know, kid shit.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So when did you start playing out?
I think I like played an open mic when I was 18 or something, and then played, I don't know, 3 or 5 shows the next couple years as I got a little better, and people asked me to be in a band here and there, and then I was in a band in Nebraska for a summer, and then I came to Texas and I met Katie Rose Cox.
I don't know who that is.
She's a badass fiddle player and songwriter, banjo player, and we had a band called Shotgun Party for like 5 years with Chris Kreps. He plays with Dale Watson.
Where'd you guys play?
I played at the Continental Club on Wednesdays when the Hot Club of Cacao Town, we were like the Walmart Hot Club of Cacao Town. So when they were out of town, they let us play. And yeah, so I made that long story kind of short.
So when you decided to come to Austin, you came to Austin, and that Katie Rose, you said, is her name?
Mm-hmm. I met her at the place on Riverside where Flipnotics. Like a zillion years ago.
Oh, on Barton Springs. Yeah.
Yeah. Barton Springs. Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. Barton Springs. Flipnotics. Yeah. I missed that place. So what year did you move here?
06.
06. Okay. Then you were going to Momo's and stuff then too? Or
I didn't discover that place until like, I think after. Yeah. That wasn't my scene, but I knew like some people who worked there and stuff.
Okay. You knew Jack.
And, yeah. Yeah.
Fabulous Jack Martin. He lives in New York now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've seen him up there a couple of times.
Lucky.
Yeah.
He's got style. That's what all the dogs say. Jack.
Wait. Oh, that's Madonna.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, what song is that? Dress You Up in My Love. What a great song. So you moved here. You started doing that stuff, the Walmart version of the
Hot Club.
Hot Club of what, Cowtown or whatever. And How did you end up doing this first record, the When I Come Down?
So I was in Shotgun Party, and then I was in another band called Loves It, And I kind of branched off on my own, I guess, in maybe 2014 or 2015. And I'd never, like, led a band by myself before. So I just started, like, renting space at, I don't know, what's it called? The Space?
Space.
I rented some space.
They sponsored the show.
Space. Yeah. Oh, hi,
Space,
guys,
rehearsal,
thanks.
And recording. You can find them at spaceatx.com.
Space. Ooh. I got together with my old pal Sly Barrick and Andrew Pressman and just started like jamming. I was like, hey, I can lead a band. This isn't hard. I've been doing it all along. Whoa. And then, you know, I think I scraped together like $2,500 to record, rented gear from Rock and Roll Rentals. Gary engineered it. Very DIY.
You were already with Gary at the time?
I was already making my move, dude.
Oh, making your move.
Making that move. Hey, baby, want to make a record?
That's a lot of people's moves on both in both sexes. You know what I mean? Around here. A lot of, you want to write a song?
Making a record's like, you're committed, because that's a long, it's going to take a while.
Yeah.
Like, writing a song could take 35 seconds.
It can also go Fleetwood Mac at any moment. You know what I mean? Where... you break up, but you still have the like. You still have the rest of the month to pay for, paid for from Rock and Roll Rentals, and you still got to finish your record.
Yeah.
So that, what a great resource that is. There's so much of that that's been around since I first went to Rock and Roll Rentals in 1991 or 92 and rented a 4-track cassette thing to work on my stuff. You know what
That's
I mean?
So cool.
It's a cool thing. Now they got gear, you know.
I just bought a used PA from there.
You did?
To
yeah.
take on tour and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. They rent things like this and stuff like that. They all kinds of stuff.
I don't even know what that is. It looks like a Christmas toy.
It's a specific podcast recording device.
Okay. I think it's a toy, folks.
It is. It's like a recording thing for people that don't know how to use that. You know what I mean?
That's weird, because I don't know what that is, but I do know what this is.
Yeah, that thing's great.
Hmm.
So what gear did you rent to record on? Did you get a hard disk recorder or something? You recorded onto your computer. You got like interface stuff.
For the fire I saw,
yeah.
We recorded a bunch.
No. For when I come down.
Oh, that I'm not sure. I don't remember. Gary would know.
Okay.
Should we call him?
No.
Hey, babe. I know you're on stage in San Marcos right now.
Who's he playing with?
I think The Lonesome Heroes.
Oh, yeah. Great band.
Yes.
Do you still see this guy named Chris Midas?
Well, I've heard the name, so maybe, yeah.
Big fan. Big fan of that guy.
Does he turn shit to gold?
Yeah. He turns bullshit into marmalade.
Ew, that's even worse.
It's not bullshit marmalade. It turns into like raspberry marmalade.
I'm not sure if we're metaphoring or not. Does he make confection condiments or what's happening?
No. He's just a really nice guy who plays bass. He actually plays all the instruments. He would do these recordings and he'd go rent a thing from Rock and Roll Rentals, like a digital recorder, go record his stuff and then bring me this badass thing that he had recorded.
Okay.
Yeah.
When I record, I use Logic Pro on my little MacBook.
And so you did this record just a MacBook, like, mm-hmm. you know, hey.
Yeah.
I mean you realize that's actually cool because there's so many people that are doing that. It can go the way of like Billie Eilish, or it can go the way of like you, or it can go the way of shit that people send me. Like, hey, can I be on your podcast, man? I just made my first record. And you're like, man, it really sounds like you just made your first record, dude.
I remember.
Yeah. But this is like your first record you made on a computer, right?
I think so, yeah. The first one I engineered.
Okay, well, it's fucking great.
Oh,
like,
thanks.
Great job.
Yeah, I engineered July and Georgica and a bunch of the synth and piano stuff and backup. Yeah. And people were like, yeah, you can learn Logic. Watch the videos. I suck at watching videos to learn. I got a freaking old book and looked at the book to learn Logic. And I was like, yeah, books.
Yeah. But a new book. But the old-fashioned book. An old-fashioned book. Yeah. Sorry.
It was a book from 1648. It was a prophecy.
It's on a scroll.
Control B. Okay. Bounce.
That's how you, yeah, that's how you bounce them tracks, huh?
So, I'm trying to act smart. I don't remember right now.
Hey, Rosie, family. I'm sorry.
No, I love it. She's a fan.
She is a fan.
She's like, can I?
She listened. She also listened to your record today.
She did.
Yeah.
Aww.
Yeah. So you did. You okay? Let's go back to when you finished your first. You finished your first record. You put it out yourself. Did you hire like a publicist or something like that, or like it just kind of got around?
Yeah, I didn't have the resources at the time. I just sort of taught another friend of mine who was underemployed, or fun employed, whatever you want to call it, how to like make the emails and
so sorry
spreadsheet and how to bother people at radio stations. So I would say that there's probably about like 11 to 44 people who've heard that album. So thanks for listening.
But the right people heard it.
Yes.
One of the 11 to 44 people was, was willing to put it in his top 10. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, so where do you play? Like you're playing Hole in the Wall today, the day that this comes out. You're playing Hole in the Wall from 6 to 8 p.m. Full band, dancers, drink specials, dance contest, mind-bending merch garment,
yes!
And much, much more.
Mucho, mucho más.
You didn't bring me any merch?
Uh-uh. I mean, I did.
I always want free shit.
I did.
That's just my thing. I just want free shit. That's how I go. What'd you bring me?
Okay. Pick a hand.
Okay. Left hand. Ah, I got nothing. Oh, I got a button. Thank you.
It's the tiniest merch. Well, the thing is you know how like making music costs money and it's hard and stuff. I have one more payment to make and then the CDs will be mine.
Yeah.
And I might have a t-shirt in the car.
You don't have to give me a t-shirt. The button's just enough. I just
it's
want
pretty
something.
Cute. Isn't yeah, it tiny?
It's very cute. Yeah.
It's like wicked small, y'all.
Yeah.
And you can't read any of the words on it. So as a marketing device, it's fucking awesome.
Tell me about the Omnicord. And the Omnicord, I just realized that when I was reading your thing, I was like, someone rented my Omnicord for a day for a movie and never brought it back. I thank you.
That's
for,
a felony, sir.
It's a felony. Looking at your Instagram.
That's like a murder.
Yeah.
Who is it? Blast them.
I can't say who it is because they're a known person. And they were doing the props. And they said, hey.
Was it Mayor Adler?
It was Mayor Adler.
Fucking hell.
Boy, people don't like that guy.
Because he steals Omnicords.
He's an Omnicord thief.
He's an Omnicord robber. Oh, about my Omnicord. Sorry.
How'd you get it?
I got it because Gary Newcomb gave it to me for my birthday this year.
He's a good dude.
Yeah, he's the best. And
besides the white one, same one I have, comes in the gray case.
I have a brown case.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool.
And it's so fun. It has like put me on another plane, I think, mentally, spiritually, musically. And I love playing, rearranging old songs for the Omnicord because it just, you know, it has a built-in beat. So it makes me change the phrasing and melodies a little bit, and it's just so much fun to play with.
For those of you that aren't driving, you can look this up. It was made by Suzuki, and it's an instrument that's made for people to learn, be able to play music without knowing how to play music. There's buttons with the chords, and then a thing you strum, and beats that happen like a Casio.
It's like the ancestor, it's like the 80s cousin of the turn of the century auto harp,
mm-hmm.
which was also made to assist like beginners in singing in groups and having fun. So it's a really accessible, fun instrument. And to some people it sounds cheesy, but to most of us cool, crazy people, it sounds magical.
Thing. Yeah, and when you get one as a songwriter, the next 10 songs at least are written strictly on Omnicord.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, really fun.
That's what I wrote a tour, the first song, and it's on a record. And the track, I did it with the Omnicord, and then it built up, and then just at the very last verse, everything cuts out, and it's just the little beat from the Omnicord. So awesome. So as a writer, like, it's funny because it opens this thing, and it's one of those things when you talk to songwriters that it's a lot simpler. Like if you enter what you're doing simply, it won't be as daunting a task. When you strum a thing on the omnicorder, it comes on, you just start singing, and things are kind of basic. Like the chords move very normally. They're very block kind of chords. They're not too, you can't do too much. You can make a minor, you can make a minor seventh, you can make a major seventh, and that's it, right?
Yeah.
There's no diminished ninth or anything where you can really like stay on a chord and just come up with melodies. Is that how you do it? You just sing, you start singing, and there you go?
I actually don't think I have written anything new on the omnicord. I kind of like to write on the piano maybe the most, and like the synth, I think maybe because I like melody so much to start with, that because it has such a strong beat, I'd feel pushed around or something. So I haven't tried composing on it yet.
That's interesting that you say that. So you compose mostly on piano. Do you, what
or
kind
just
of
just out loud, just vocally or with guitar? Yeah.
So melody is king with you.
Much of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say probably 70% of the songs are like.
Outside of Alanis Morissette and Garbage, who are your biggest influences?
Bjork and Sam Cooke, Mahalia Jackson, Bernice Johnson Reagan. I don't know. Yeah. So many things. Yeah. But definitely my favorites. I love Sam Cooke is my favorite singer.
Yeah.
And obviously he's a wonderful songwriter.
Yeah. Yeah, he's pretty amazing. All right, so what's your discipline as a writer? Like, are you a daily?
No, I am a weekly for sure. I have it in my calendar, like, write a song, like, even if it sucks, like, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, and then beyond the weekly, you know, it often, and by it, I mean, I don't know, the universe goes, hey, push record, write this down. So that happens. So the discipline is there, but I think more than discipline, it's just like something in my body or mind that needs to write music, and it does.
Yeah. In your songs, are you working it out? Like, is this you working your stories out, or are these characters?
Of course, yeah. Yeah, I'm working out my story. I'm working out everybody's story. And
right, but what I'm basically saying is, are these your personal experience songs?
Yeah.
More than,
I mean, they are, and they're also just my observations of the world.
Okay.
And for sure. Sometimes I'll sing a song that I wrote like 12 years ago, and the words mean something different but to me now, but they mean something just as weird. I'm like, whoa, did I write myself a poem from like 25-year-old Jenny? Weird.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It says you're a writer on your... It seems like on your website you write a lot. Do you write for other things or anything?
Yeah, I do. I've written a book. I write.
Is it out?
It is. Yeah, I self-published a book. It's like maybe nine.
Shit, I would have read it.
it's a short. It's a biography of my paternal grandmother who played pro baseball in the 40s.
Wow, like the Madonna movie.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, no shit, that's awesome.
The picture, and it's got really cool pictures and amazing just like baseball history that.
Oh, that's great. Did you ever meet her? You did. Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, we hung out a lot.
That must have been amazing. Did you get the stories directly from her?
Oh yeah, I just sat.
That's awesome. I would love to read that.
Oh cool. I'll bring you one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just we were pretty close for people born like 60 years apart or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I remember when my grandpa died, I was like, oh shit, is it going to be one of those things where, you know, grandma goes too? Because grandpa, she hung around for like a lot more years. But around that time, I was like, okay, I'm going to go sit with her and bring my laptop. And I think I had a recording device at the time, but I freaking lost it. But so what I did was recorded and just typed everything she said and then made a little book.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Did she get to see the book?
She did.
Oh, how cool.
She did.
How cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm really close to my, I have one grandma left. She's 98.
Oh, shit. She's what's her name?
Well, I call her Abita.
Abita.
Because I couldn't say abuelita when I was a little kid. But her name's Olga. That's her husband, my grandpa. He passed away in 2014, and you know, we were worried about that same thing, but she just fucking kicking.
Abuelita.
Yeah, she's a rocker. Anyway, so what an amazing story.
Yeah.
So what else do you write?
I write bios, you know, like sort of professional bios for artists, like especially like female people, non-binary and queer people who just like don't have publicists.
Yeah.
And sometimes I write for what's it called? Book and Film Globe. It's like a
That's cool.
It's a website that reviews TV and books and stuff, but I haven't written for them in a while.
And when you say that you write bios for women and non-binary and queer people, it's because of your understanding, obviously, of where they're coming from, or do they come to you because you are...
I don't really know how
to write somebody's bio that... what I mean?
I think it started because, like, I'm a good writer, and then I was doing it just for friends, and most of my friends are like women and queers and stuff. So that's just sort of how it started. And then like maybe it's also those kind of demographics that have a harder time like bragging or something.
Yeah.
Or less resources to afford a publicist. So it's like,
yeah,
sometimes you really need someone to hear your story and then write this cool shit about you, because it's like kind of awkward to be like, dear world, I'm the motherfucking shit. Yeah.
So hard to do, isn't it?
So yeah. So I just do that, and then people come to me sometimes and they're like, oh, you did my friend Stella's blah blah blah, can you do mine? And I'm like, yeah, that'll be $25.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you should get paid for it. I mean,
yeah.
You're working, for Christ's sake. You're working, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, I'm not a bum.
Yeah, you're not a bum.
I love writing. I love reading. Yeah, words are cool.
Yeah, words are cool.
Except when they're not.
Yeah, exactly. Words are cool, except when they're not. That's going to be the title. It should be the title. I don't title the podcast. I should. I wanted to at one point to do that.
That's a lot of pressure. It's like every week you have to come up with a cool name.
Yeah. As I have two shows a week. Sometimes three. This week I dropped three. Yeah,
damn.
Last 3 weeks in a row I've dropped three. 9 shows in 3 weeks. That's why I have so many shows.
Damn.
I know. I was going to ask you a question, but then you threw me because I started talking about myself. In these experiences, in being the question of being a woman in music is a trite question and kind of a weird thing. But there is, you know, oh yeah. I don't think singer-songwriters get as much unless, like, there's a drummer. Like, oh, she's really good for a girl. You know what I mean? Like, there's that stuff that kind of drives me nuts.
What's the question, though?
Have you experienced that navigating this business, and has it been a difficult row to hoe?
Yes. I love that you used the word hoe.
I didn't say it was
kidding.
A difficult hoe to row. I said it's a difficult row to hoe. Yeah, that's like the oldest.
Difficult rodeo, I've never been fucking farmed.
And I'm throwing this around like I'm from Indiana or something.
Yeah, it has been tough and it is crazy. I think people have certain expectations about an entitlement about your body and how much they can touch you and like take pictures with you. Smiling, you've heard, I'm sure, about that, telling people to smile.
Yeah. I had, was it Eleanor or Bonnie Whitmore? One of them wrote that, don't tell me to smile. It was Eleanor Masterson's.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't tell me to smile. Yeah.
But like, yeah. I've been groped and touched and I tell people not to, and it still happens all the time. Yeah. And it's just like, I know that has happened to Gary like maybe twice, and it happens to me. I have lost count how many times.
Sure.
And it's just, it makes it harder sometimes to go out and play shows when it gets bad. You're like, oh my fucking God, really? Don't touch me. Stop it.
So this pandemic, it works for you with this social distancing. Like,
you'd
as
think.
Far as like that kind of stuff, yeah.
You'd think.
I didn't mean to make a joke out of it.
No.
I wasn't trying to be insensitive. I was trying to break
the ice. No, I thought you were asking a real question. But yeah, it can be hard. I think I go hard for other women that are in the industry and like people of color, and because it's just like, I think we get fewer opportunities.
People marginalized.
Yeah, we get fewer opportunities because you're just not invited to the table that often, or if you are, it's like for token reasons or for sexualized reasons or blah blah blah, and it's like. I used to have a podcast and I would only have guests if they were not a cishet white guy, and that annoyed some people, but I was like, you guys have so many, if you look at all the podcasts, like the percentage of y'all on there is like 95%. So here's just this
First of
tiny,
all, I'm Cuban.
Tiny corner of the world that.
I know. It's, I like to say, first of all, I'm Cuban because it's funny. Yeah. At this medium is like a white dudes, especially dudes like me, like in their 50s, even. Like, yeah.
I've never been to Cuba.
I've never been to Cuba either. I was born in Miami. But my parents were born in Cuba. I won't go there. Listen to this. This is amazing. I won't go because this regime that threw my whole family out of their country, my whole family. Am I going to go back there and be like, oh, hey, how's it going, dudes? Let me spend some money and give it to your regime that kicked out my family. It doesn't make sense to me in my mind. I think people should go. I don't care. Family is gone. I don't judge them for it. I just can't put those two things together.
Can I ask you a question about that? So I understand that sentiment. I mean, I don't know what it's like, but do you think, though, like, do you ever dream about like what it would feel like to go there if that's where your ancestors are from, and like what it would feel like?
Yep.
Wow.
It'd be awesome. It wouldn't be awesome in this. I mean, I have friends that have gone that have been like, it's real sad.
Yeah.
You know, you're living the dream and those people are not, you know, and you're just kind of there getting cheap rum from, you know, dudes that can't afford
doing tourist shit in an island where people can't afford the tourist shit.
Exactly.
Is like
exactly.
Unethical and cringy.
Yeah. And maybe I'll do that somewhere else, but I can't do it to my own people. Look, I'm honest, man. So let me ask you this real quick, because this is, you had that podcast that only had non-white dudes on it, which is
unless they was gay.
Mostly was gay. Straight white dudes. Unless they was gay. Is that, were you in an English accent or I just threw that in there?
I have no idea. I'm so weird, dude. I have no idea.
Do you feel the tokenism thing, all of that stuff has been, are you hot?
I'm smoking, babe.
I'm trying to find a way to say this where it makes the most sense, but it is it's a legitimate question, is that over the last few years, as far as like non-binary people have, their story has been able to be told more. And there has been, sadly, there was once no acceptance, but now there seems to be a bit more of an acceptance. Do you feel like you having that podcast isn't as necessary now because over the last, say, 5 years, people have really woken up to...
I can't really say. I feel like on a positive day, if my hormones are like doing what they should, I'd be like, yeah, we don't need that anymore because everything's good. But everything is not good. I think we need more of that.
I'm not saying everything's good, but do you feel like they're like...
I'm saying to agree with that question, right. I would have to also think that things are a lot better for trans and sure. non-binary people. I don't think they're a lot better.
Okay.
I think because people know about it and will think twice before they get violent or say something terrible, I don't think it means things are much better.
Right.
I think there should be more of this and more of that. That was at Dozen Street. Did you ever go there?
No.
It was on 12th and Chicon. Okay. They had a lot of fun programming. Yeah. So more of that. More equity in programming.
Yeah.
Put that on a shirt and never mind.
Yeah. It's tough when you book a thing to always have to, you know what I mean? Like, I just take people as people. You know what I'm saying? And then I will look at something and be like, shit, you know, it's only been like, white singer-songwriters for the last, you know, 2 weeks or something. That's 4 episodes, but you know what I mean?
I seriously, though, sometimes get work, and they're well-meaning for sure, but they're like, it's just, I haven't booked a woman in a long time. And I'm like, cool. You know I'm not the only one. And you could book. Right, there's right. so many, right, like, right. cool. Maybe you could make a choice to... do 50% of at least your inquiry emails or whatever.
Right. And you know, I mean, you know, the fact that just this weekend, the first all-female band that wrote their own songs and played their own instruments and sang their own parts wasn't that the first band that ever had a number one album that was all female, like that was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The first all female band inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that's been around since 1986 or 1987 or something. It's taken this long to induct the Go-Go's.
Right.
You know, I've written with three of them. I have a band with one of them.
Oh my God!
And, you know, I'm very close with three of them. And their story, a lot of women's stories from even back then was like, oh, we would sign you, but we already have a woman. And then with them, it was, wait a minute, so just all girls? Like, I'm sorry, this is rock and roll. Even, I just read a thing yesterday, this drummer guy from Vanilla Fudge, that, you know that band? Mm-hmm. 60s band?
Mm-hmm.
This guy, Carmine Appice, or Peace, I don't know how to say his name, played with Rod Stewart for a long time. They had no business getting inducted because they're wimpy.
Yeah,
that's pretty stupid to say. I don't know. I mean, to me, musicians are musicians, and I feel like in the world of music, there isn't as much like with from musician to musician, there's not as much sexism as when you get out of it into the business aspect of it.
Say that one more time.
Like within the musician community, within just us musicians, the sexism isn't as rampant as once you start taking one step outside to club owners, to booking people, to record people.
You mean like among our community ties, people we know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes some sense. And I think, do you know Beth Chrisman?
I know that name.
She's a close friend of mine, but we have actually been doing some work with training and having talks with venue owners that have problematic... unsafe spaces, and we did a training in June with a nonprofit called Hollaback that does like anti-harassment training.
That's great.
And we had like the booker of the Driscoll come, and like just we had some people finally listen to us about some stuff that's been going on for years.
I could see.
And it was like, whoa, this took maybe 6 years for this pretty bad problem to get fixed, but it was nice that it finally happened.
Yeah. It's interesting. So let's go back to the fire I saw. Let's talk about music. I just wanted to get your stuff. Sometimes it's how someone views the world is more informative as to how they recorded a record. You know, informative of who they are.
Yeah.
Which is what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah.
You having a good time? You like talking to me?
Yeah, I am. I'm nervous or self-conscious that I'm being too like vulnerable and dark, because that's like how I've been feeling for a while. So this is kind of a dark album. Like, yeah. So I think you read on my website, like I had gone to it's called like intensive outpatient program for like trauma survivors. And I went to that to deal with like a history of like assault and abuse. And so sometimes I just have to work really hard to feel safe and comfortable. And it's like, oh my God, can I feel the most safe and most comfortable when I'm singing and having a great time doing that? And so it's like, oh my God, but can we make the venues feel safe? And yeah. Can we not get sexualized like all the time?
Yeah.
But yeah, so some of the songs on The Fire I Saw are, you know, about the hope that you feel when you're doing the thing you want to do with your life, and then the fear and worry that when you feel like you can't do that because you're afraid.
Yeah. Heavy Talks with Jenny Parrott. Well, it's a great album. You really, your whatever song is in you that comes out agrees with me.
Aw, cool.
Resonates with me on a cellular level. So I like your music a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I've enjoyed talking to you.
I've enjoyed talking to you too. Thank you for having me. I'd love to hear some of your instruments.
They're crazy. My friend built me that SG.
Say what?
My friend built me that SG. Jason Swedberg. He's a cool guy. He might have done some work for Gary. I know he's a huge Gary fan.
Wow, it looks like a Batman.
Looks like a Batman.
There's a Batman guitar
my
in here,
Batman
y'all.
My Batman guitar. Why am I this English guy? Whenever I go to say something funny, like, why am I this English guy? Why aren't I another guy?
Like
a New Haven guy.
I don't know.
It's been great talking to you. This record is available now. If you're listening to this podcast, it is available where you, and you've got CDs.
Yep.
Coming.
Vinyl coming.
Oh, you didn't even say that. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Vinyl is coming in the winter because of like some ship that got caught in a canal or something cool like that.
No, there's the supply chain and
yeah.
the vinyl and the people.
Some boring
and the pandemic.
Reasons.
And then there's a lacquer thing that burnt down at the beginning of 2020.
Yeah. It's probably my fault. I did something.
No.
Yeah.
No, it's happening everywhere. In fact, I work with Austin Music Foundation that, you know, we did that record last year. With the Stone Wheels, and we're doing a record now, but like we're finishing the record at the end of this month to be able to have vinyl by May.
Right. I ordered this vinyl like early summer, and it's yeah.
But you'll have CDs. People can stream this music. You've got
buttons.
You've got a mind-bending merch garment. I want to use
buttons.
That for the proper branding verbiage that you have for the thing.
Thank you. I told you I like the word.
Tonight, if you're listening to this, the day that it comes out, Friday, November 12th, you can go to the Hole in the Wall here in Austin at 6 p.m. 6 to 8 p.m. You're playing some other shows. You're hitting the road, so as they say. So people can go to your website, jennyparrott.com, look up all the dates. I know there's a lot of stuff I'm missing. You're going to have to come back again. We'll do it again.
Oh, you're not missing a thing. We talked about everything and, yeah.
And then some.
Y más.
Y más. Todo y más. Thanks for doing the show, Jenny.
Thank you for having me.
These eyes can't see.
That's Jenny Parrott. Her second album, The Fire I Saw, is out today, November 12th. Find her at jennyparrott.com. Find the album wherever it is that you stream and download your jams. It's called The Fire I Saw. Absolutely fantastic. And if you live in Austin, her release show is tonight, Friday, November 12th, 6 p.m. at The Hole in the Wall. As I said, go to jennyparrott.com for all of your Jenny Parrott needs. Great, great, great conversation. Love talking to her. Love getting to know her. Looking forward to seeing her live sometime. Gang, I will not be at Jenny's show tonight because I'll be playing in Houston. If you live in Houston, tonight, Friday, November 12th, Skyrocket will be playing at Last Concert Cafe. All right, that's all I'm going to say. Get out there, JennyParrott.com. Get involved with her. Find out how you can support her in the many ways. Find out if she's coming to a town near you on her little Southeast tour that she's doing over here in the next month or so. All right? Thanks so much for listening to the show. Have a great week, whatever it is you're doing. Don't forget to subscribe and like this podcast. Share it wherever it is that you... If you do like the show, if you're a fan of Jenny Parrott, share it and tag us. Or tag us or use the hashtag, HowDidIGetHerePod. All right? Thank you so much for listening to the show. Have a great weekend. Go see Jenny Parrott tonight. This is the rest of her song called I Thought from her album, The Fire I Saw. This is Jenny Parrott. Have a great weekend, you guys. Let's get down.
Me. I thought you looked good to me, I thought, but I was dreaming deeply. These ears can't hear any but dark dancing fear, and this skin. You look good to me. I thought you looked good to me, I thought, but I was dreaming you.